We have no outline this morning or tonight. A double dose today. Or a lack of a dose, anyway. I hope that you have something to mark on. I hope that you don't mind making some marks in your Bible. I know we sometimes are scared to write in those Bibles, but sometimes making some notes in those Bibles can be very helpful to us. And as we look, we're going to begin on Sunday night looking through some chapters in the Bible and just looking at the things we can learn in those chapters. Because sometimes I think we have a tendency to maybe read something in the Bible and not really think about all that it has to say to us. And so I hope that we can begin to study some things that will help us to understand God better, help us to understand His Word better, and help us to realize that there is a lot more to the Bible than sometimes we have realized was there. We're going to begin tonight in Genesis chapter 1. What better place to start than the beginning? If you've been here on Sunday night, and probably even if you haven't been here on Sunday night to hear me talk to the children about what's in Genesis chapters 1 and 2, you probably were pretty familiar with those. A lot of people who aren't even very familiar with the Bible know Genesis 1. Well, that's where the Bible talks about God making the world. But what else is in there? Oh, I know it says He created the world, but what can we learn from this chapter that will be helpful to us? I don't know if we'll have time to deal with all the things we can learn in chapter 1 tonight, but we'll look at a few of them and we'll see how far we can get. There are 1,189 chapters in the Bible. And so if we were to take one chapter a week, it would take us nearly over 3 years. If you took one a day, it would take you 3 years to study through every chapter in the Bible. If we did just one a week, well, we'd be here for a very long time. But that's okay. We can't study it all at one sitting. So we'll start there and we'll see what all we go. Now, some of the chapters, obviously, we won't have to spend the whole time on them. But others we will. I know some churches, and some people talk about at a church where they were, well, the preacher read one verse, and then he'd go off telling stories and talking, and that was all for the whole week, and they only had church Sunday morning. They didn't even have Sunday night or a Bible class on Wednesday. And so one verse a week. Well, there are 31,102 verses in the King James Version of the Bible. Can you imagine how many weeks it would take? Well, we know how many weeks it would take. It would take 31,102. How many years would that be? 600 years to get through the whole Bible reading one verse on a Sunday? We need to understand, first and foremost, if the only time we're opening our Bibles is when we're here together, we're not getting enough. We are starving to death spiritually if we're only getting spiritual nourishment this one time or two times, or even if we'd have Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night three times. That's not enough. Would you only eat three meals a week? Well, certainly not. We want three meals a day. So we need to think beyond just the time that we spend together here. This is good time, and we should enjoy it and make the most of it. But that's not enough. It'll never be enough for our spiritual development if all we do is just what we get here. Okay, let's learn some things from Genesis chapter 1. We begin in chapter 1 and verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. First thing that we want to notice right there in verse 1, you could put a little underline under God. God's already there. God is there in the beginning. So that kind of adds it, well, what was God doing before that? See, the Bible doesn't address that. Well, where did God come from? Sometimes people laugh that, sometimes mockingly, but sometimes seriously they wonder, well, who made God? Or where did God come from? How did He come to exist? Genesis 1:1 doesn't try to explain that. Now, there are some other passages in the Bible that will talk about the eternal, everlasting nature of God. But Genesis 1 doesn't try to prove God's existence. Genesis 1:1 simply begins with, God's already there, and here's His action that He's going to take. He's going to create the heaven and the earth. So it starts there. Because the Bible is an explanation of God's relationship with His creation. It's His autobiography of that section of history here on this earth where He dealt with His creation. So He doesn't tell us all about before that. Now, there are some verses that tell some things about what happened before the foundation of the world and what God did and planned before that. But Genesis 1's not one of them. So if you're trying to prove to somebody that God exists, don't go to Genesis 1, because Genesis 1 is not there to prove that God exists. Genesis 1 simply states it as an already acknowledged fact. In the beginning, God was already there. And then He created the heaven and the earth. So that's the first thing we want to notice there. And then He begins the creation process. And I want us to notice, as we read through the book of Genesis, and we're not going to read the entire chapter, first chapter tonight even, but as we read through the first two chapters of Genesis about this creation, notice the times that it talks about God creating something, and what it says He created. Let me give you just a few examples. Down in verse 11, He said, let the earth bring forth grass, and the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after its kind. And verse 12 says, and the earth brought forth grass, and herb yielding seed after its kind, and the tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself. God created things complete. As we read through Genesis chapters 1 and 2, it should become very clear to us that the concepts of creation and evolution are totally incompatible. Now, we have a lot of people, religious people, people who claim to be Christians, people who claim they believe the Bible, who are trying to mesh creation and evolution together, and they call that theistic evolution, that God kind of started the seed of life, and it, then the amoeba, and we talked about that in class this morning, that the idea that this amoeba then turned into a multiple-celled organism, and then on and on, and then it kept growing into a new organism and a new organism all the way up until mankind showed up. You can't get that out of Genesis chapters 1 and 2. In order to get that idea that somehow God started it and then it evolved, you've got to ignore Genesis chapters 1 and 2. Because Genesis chapter 1 makes it very clear. He made the plants. He made the grass. He made the trees. And you can read on down. You'll find He made the animals. He made the fish. He made the birds. He made the great sea creatures. He made the cows. He made all the creeping things. He made them. He created them. And especially when we get into Genesis 2 with the creation of mankind, it's even more clear. You can't have it both ways. It's very frustrating for people sometimes, though, because there's so much out there about evolution and so much of it that's supposedly proven evidence, facts that can't be denied. But when you actually examine them closer, you'll find they're not facts at all. They're theories, they're hypotheses, they're guesses, they're blind leaps in the dark. But we cannot join that idea of creation and evolution together. First and foremost, because the Bible is very clear when it says, and if we believe the Bible, It says God created these things already in their certain categories, not to evolve into those categories. So that's one aspect of it. There are other aspects as well as we're going to look at. Notice, then as well as you go through the first chapter of Genesis, that God creates things in an orderly fashion. As this is written down, we notice that He makes light and dark, and then He makes the sky and separates the sky and the water there under it. And then we see He makes dry land. And then He comes back and He makes the sun and the moon and the stars to go out there in what in Hebrew is the heavens, what we would call outer space. Then on day five, He makes those birds and fish to fly in the air and swim in the water. Would have been a strange thing if He had made those plants on day two before He made the dry land on day three. But He didn't. He made the dry land appear and the plants and the trees and things to grow on that dry land. Would have been very strange to have made all the plants when there was no land for them. Also, He made those plants, and then on day five He makes the animals. It would have been very strange for Him to make those animals back on day two or three, and then make the plants on day six, and those poor animals would have had nothing to eat. So He did things in an orderly fashion. He did things in a way that makes sense. Interestingly enough, this fact of the order of the creation from day one through day six is another evidence against the idea of evolution and the idea that things evolved over a long period of time, and I'll tell you why. He made plants. Let's pretend for just a minute that those people are right who say that it evolved. Let us suppose that those plants evolved. And then it was a long, long time. Eons of time. Millions of years before the insects and animals and birds evolved. How do most plants, or at least many varieties of plants, reproduce themselves? Well, they have to be pollinated. Well, how are they pollinated? Well, little things like a hummingbird or a little thing like a bumblebee or a bee or some sort of little flying insect goes from one to the other and pollinates them. And many of those plants cannot reproduce unless they've been pollinated. Furthermore, we have many plants that we call annuals. And an annual is a plant that you have to have a new seed and replant every year because it won't come back. The perennials come back, but the annuals don't. If you plant an annual this year, it may be beautiful this year, but don't expect to see it next year. You're going to have to plant another seed next year if you want that plant to come up. Well, how is it going to get those seeds? Well, they had to be pollinated. And the how would those plants have survived for eons of time, millions of years, with nothing to pollinate them? Why, they couldn't have. We also notice, as we look at this chapter, that God says that an evening and a morning were the first day, and an evening and a morning were the second day, an evening and a morning, third day, and so on. He says that a day is comprised of an evening and a morning. In other words, day and night. The dark and the light. That makes one day. First, second, third, and fourth. Well, if it's eons and eons of time, then what is it? Dark for 50 million years and then it's light for 50 million years? Well, plants couldn't survive that. Photosynthesis wouldn't be able to take place in those plants. They couldn't grow in 50 million years of darkness, or even in 50 years of darkness, much less 50 million. They couldn't grow, they couldn't develop. They have to have that regular cycle of sunlight and darkness that we have today, that we've had since the beginning of time. The evening and morning still follow in that cycle just like they did then? Yes, absolutely. There are some who try to say, well, when God says a day back in Genesis there, He didn't really mean a day. He meant an age of time. Well, really? Really did He? Well, because I wonder, if He meant that, let's look at verse number 14. Right after He's just said in verse 13, the evening and the morning were the third day. And then He says in verse number 14, God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night. That's the light from the darkness, day from night. And let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. Well, if a day is an age of eons of time, how long is a year? God says days and years. He's not talking about eons of time. Do you think God didn't know the word for eons of time? Sure He did. He used those words in some places. He talked about certain things that would be age lasting. In other words, they would last for an eon of time. He used those words, but He doesn't use them here. He uses the word for day. That's the same word that He uses for day over in Exodus when He gives the children of Israel the Ten Commandments, and He says, 6 days you shall labor, but the seventh shall be holy to the Lord. So what, were they supposed to labor for 6 eons of time before they got a break? No. 6 days. God knows how long a day is. He created the day and the night. And so as we look at this chapter, as we actually look closely at what it says, we can learn a lot about how God created this world with a regular schedule, day and night. The fundamentals of how long a day is and how long a year is haven't changed. They're still the same. They're so regular that mathematicians, astronomers, can predict 5,000 years from now, if the world lasts that long, when Halley's Comet's going to come by, when the full moon's going to be, when there's going to be a solar eclipse or a lunar eclipse. They can predict it. Why can they predict that? Because they know exactly how long it takes the Earth to go around the sun, how long it takes the Earth to rotate, how long it takes the moon to go around the Earth, and they can calculate it mathematically. God made this world precise. It works more precisely than any watch or clock that we've been able to invent. It was good. Notice that all of the things that God said He created were good. Verses 10, verse 12, 18, 21, and 25, He says He saw that what He had done and it was good. In verse 31, when He's finished, He said He saw it and it was very good. When He was finished making everything, He said, it is very good. Good. It was perfect. He had created the perfect world. Unfortunately, it didn't remain that way. Wouldn't it have been wonderful to have seen that perfect world as He had created it? But there are several other things that we want to notice. What day did He create the sun and the moon and the stars? What? That's way down here on verse. Wait a minute, we just read that in verse 14 and 15. He talks about these greater lights in verse 16 and He sets the lights to give light and day and night. Wait a minute, that's day 4. And yet if you go back to day 1, it says, God said, let there be light, and there was light. Have you ever thought about that? If we asked, Well, where does light come from? Well, we might say, well, the light bulbs. Well, but with the blue outside, well, where does light come from? Well, from the sun. Where did it come from before there was a sun? It is true that the sun produces light, but the sun is not the source of light. God is the source of that light. And we need to recognize that. God created the sun in such a way that it produces light for us. But there was light for 3 days before He created that sun. He's the source of all things. He created the light. And He created the sun later on to be a light for us. Another thing, as long as we've been talking about creation and evolution, you can go down through chapter 1 and you can mark how many times when He's talking about creating the plants, the animals, and so forth, the fish and the birds, how many times He says the phrase or some phrase similar to after His kind. He talks about the tree and the herb yielding seed after its kind. The tree whose fruit is in it, whose seed in itself after His kind. He talks about the animals reproducing after His kind. Each one reproduces after His kind. And you know, that's something that is such a basic thing that little children learn that really quickly. If I brought a dog up here with a whole mess of kittens and asked Abby, she's 6, she's in first grade, I could probably ask somebody younger than that, if there was somebody here younger that could talk. Julia won't count. But I could ask, well, this dog gave birth to these kittens. And she'd look at me like I was crazy. Because dogs don't give birth to kittens. Dogs give birth to puppies. Cats give birth to kittens. And it's been that way since the beginning. Things reproduced after their kind. That shoots evolution out of the water. Something can only reproduce its own kind. A monkey cannot give birth to a man. It doesn't work that way. Nature doesn't work that way. It's a law of nature that everything gives birth to its own kind. I remember a few years ago, probably 2 years ago or less, there was a big story on Fox News because this dog had given birth to kittens. I thought, these people are so gullible, it's unbelievable. Big story on the Fox News website. Dog gives birth to kittens. It's a dog-cat hybrid. Until they took it to some real scientists who, veterinarians probably, had to go to school for years to become a veterinarian so they could go, well, you know, those are dogs. They actually had them genetically tested to see, and guess what? They were dogs. Yeah. I could have asked a 3-year-old and he could have told me they were puppies. Those weren't cats. But it is amazing the efforts to which people are going to try to push this idea of evolution. And yet here, from the very beginning of creation, the plants reproduce after their kind, the fish after their kind, the birds after their kind, the animals after their kind, the creeping things after their kind, and human beings after their kind. It's been that way since day 6. It's amazing. As long as we're talking about things being created after their kind, let's look at this. Look down to verse number 26. Verse number 26 is a rich verse. God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. So God created man in His own image, verse 7 says. In the image of God created He him, male and female created He them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moves on the earth. There we have God creating. This is the condensed version. Chapter 2 is going to expand that out and tell the details. This is kind of just the little excerpt, you know, the little teaser that we get here of how it happened. But since things reproduce after their own kind, God wanted, He'd made all these plants, He'd made all these animals, but He wanted something more. He wanted something He could relate to, something that was like Him, not the same as Him, but similar, somewhat like Him. And so He created man in His image. It doesn't say He created other gods. It doesn't say that. It says He created man in His image. Let me think about that. I have in my wallet, I don't have it. In my wallet, I hope I know where it is. In my wallet, I have a picture of me and my family. It's an image. It's created in our image. It looks like us, but it's not us. In the same way, we have some characteristics that are like God, but we're not God. He created, in essence, a picture of Himself. A statue is sometimes, you know, I can carve a statue over here. Well, I can't. But a good sculptor could carve a statue that looked just like you. It'd even be three-dimensional, whereas that picture was two-dimensional. But we could make a statue look just like you, or a doll, or a mannequin. We could make one that looked just like you. But it wouldn't be you. It'd be a little different than you. But God made man in His own image. He wanted somebody that He could have a relationship with. And as nice as cats and dogs are, and as nice as, you know, some people talk to their houseplants and some people talk to their dogs and cats and treat them like children. But they're not the same. And you can't have the same kind of relationship with them that you can have with a human being. God wanted someone He could have a relationship with. And so He created man in His own image. That tells us something. He didn't create the plants in His image. He didn't create the fish or the birds in His image. And He didn't create the cattle of the field or the other animals or the creeping things in His image. Mankind is not an animal. We're different. And more than that, He says there in verses 26 and 27 and 28 that we are supposed to subdue the world and have dominion over those birds and fish and animals. We're supposed to be higher than them. We are not, as some people are trying to make it out in our society today, equal to, or as some are trying to say, less than, you know, well, human beings are just a parasite on the planet, and they're using up all the resources, and they're destroying. No! We're the crown of God's creation. He intended for us to be over the rest of His creation. It's a hierarchy kind of thing. It's a chain of command. Now, are we supposed to destroy His creation? No. Look at that word, subdue. Have we subdued? Oh, sure. We've tamed all kinds of animals. I mean, they have huge elephants in circuses that can stand up and balance a ball. I mean, they do all sorts. I saw one on a commercial, answer a telephone. He smashed the phone with his paw when he tried to dial. But they do all these kinds of things. They've trained animals. They've subdued them. You think about two of the first animals that mankind took and subdued. The wolf, which we turned into a dog, which is now man's best friend, right? And a tiger, basically. The cat. Well, I don't know if we've tamed those cats or not. They're still... But we have subdued them to some degree. People have subdued all kinds of animals. And we can. We have dominion over them because God's given that to us to be able to do that. It's also interesting there in verse 29 and verse 30, God says to those first people, "Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat," and by meat, the King James says meat, others translations would just say for food. That's your food. And in verse 30 he says, "And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to every living thing that creeps on the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb as meat. And it was so." Do you realize what that says? In the Garden of Eden, in the perfect world that God created, the people and the animals were all vegetarians. Now, some people say, "Well, we've got to do that today." Right? That's what he said. You can have the plant, but that's the way he created it initially. They were all vegetarians back then. Now we'll see that change after the flood. After the flood, God gives the meat to eat, and then with Noah, he defied certain clean animals and unclean animals. Even when Noah takes them on the ark, he has some that are to be offered as sacrifice and so forth that are clean for God's purposes. But then he gives all the meats, all the animals are available then to be eaten as well as the plants. But at this point, they didn't eat meat. Even the animals. We think about dogs and cats particularly as, they're carnivores. And, lions and wolves. But you don't see lions and tigers and wolves going around picking berries and eating vegetables. That's just not their nature. It doesn't seem. And yet, at the beginning, all the animals and man all ate the plants and not each other. Probably be a good thing, because there were some dinosaurs that were pretty big and could have eaten Adam and Eve up if they'd have been wanting to eat meat. But God made all of these things in this way. I want us to think about just how much we learn from what we've taught children. Oh, well, God made the world and He made the sun and the moon and the stars and He made the plants and the animals. And we've taught that to little children, but how much more is in that chapter? How much more do we learn when we look a little deeper at what the verses actually say? I hope that it's been beneficial to you. You know, because God created us in His image, because He wants to have a relationship with us, He planned for there to be a way for Him to have that relationship. Initially, we're going to see as we get into Genesis a little further that He did have a wonderful relationship with mankind at the beginning. But of course, sin entered in. And that broke the relationship. It broke the trust. And so He had a plan to restore that relationship. And even today, He wants us to be back in that relationship with Him. He wants all of us to be there. I so thoroughly enjoyed the lesson this morning that Byron gave us about knowing that we're saved. Because we should be able to know. The Bible's not ambiguous about how we become a Christian. It's not ambiguous about how we remain faithful to God. It's not ambiguous about those things. We ought to be able to know it. And that should give us that confidence. But if you don't have that confidence tonight, if there's a reason that your relationship with God has been severed, and He's turned His face away from you, or you've turned your back on Him, you can restore that relationship again through Jesus Christ. If you're here tonight and your relationship is not right with God, what are you waiting for? There is no better time than tonight. No better time than now. Please come as we stand and as we sing.